Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
You are listening to Mist Apex iRacing Podcast. Let's get faster. Welcome to Mist Apex iRacing Podcast. We look at iRacing from a hobbyist point of view, making you wiser, happier, and faster. I bring you experts like Brad Philpott. How's it going, Brad?
Good afternoon, Spanners. Yeah, it's going really well.
And karting fantastissimo and 3.5 botherer, Alex Van Gien. How's it going, Alex?
Yeah, it's going all right. Would have been better if last night went better, but I'm sure we'll talk about that.
We'll talk about how your stream went badly. I'd never dwell on that, Alex.
I was in that race, and Alex disappeared off the standing sheet.
Well, I even saw you on the relative, which meant you had a problem.
I feel tempted by you two. Now, I've got FOMO, because you two are always going on about Formula Renault 3.5. But here's what's happened the entire time we've been doing iRacing is I've gotten into a thing, you two have got bored of it quickly, moved on, and by the time I join you, you're already bored and move on. This has happened with MX5, Formula Renault 2.0. I know you guys were never really into MX5. Formula 3, guys, you've got to do Formula 3. So we pile all in that, and you're like, nah, F1's the way to go. So I struggle to get my A license, and I've been documenting on here my struggles to do my A license, made sure I put time aside for NPR, doing VRS, and then you guys are like, nah, 3.5 is where it's really at.
Yep.
That's true. Pretty much. It's that whole thing of you're surprised that you've been tempted by me and Brad, that we're off going and doing something, and you're surprised that you're tempted by that.
Well, I just wanted to be like the cool racy kids, because since we've been podcasting together for, the last 4 or 5 years, you guys have been like, oh, they're the big boys of racing. Brad does like Nordschleifer, Alex does all these karting things and is instantly good. And when we've turned up at karting events that I've organized, you're like the guys in their own race suit and everything. So that's why I get FOMO. I'm always chasing you guys.
But if it wasn't for you, I never would have got a PC.
Nah, that's true.
And so you're fully to blame for that.
He wouldn't be into iRacing. Fair enough. And it's worth noting that the last karting trip we did, I beat Van Gien, so I might never go karting again.
Yeah, and I've done nothing but put weight on ever since.
There's nothing to do with that. It's skill.
Yeah, as I said to you at the time, I now know how Max Verstappen felt last year whenever he had Valtteri Bottas in front of him.
Oh, right. So I'm Valtteri Bottas in that situation with the unfair advantage. But also, when it comes to iRacing, there's no weight issue there. But I am at 2300 iRating, and you are at 2286. So now I'm the Van Gien now. Look at me, I'm the Van Gien now.
Yeah, I've spent the last 3 weeks crashing. So I went from when I joined F1 at the beginning of last season, I was at 2.6, and I've dropped to 2.2 or 2.3, whatever it is now. It's been a really, really torrid 14 weeks for me on iRacing.
So maybe 3.5 isn't for me then, Brad.
I just don't understand how people don't reach like 4 or 5K by accident. Like, surely you'd have to be deliberately losing iRating to get down into the twos.
Well, how's your trip to 7 going, Brad?
Yeah, how is it? Your quest to get to 7,000 iRating, the most important arbitrary number ever, apparently.
Yeah, so that thing that I said in the last episode, I was on the final path to that, and I was like two races away from an easy 7K. And it's like, if I just carried on as normal, I just had a normal race, got a podium, it would have been fine. And that all went absolutely down the toilet when I got nerfed on the start line, when my beautiful start procedure just didn't work. I can't work out why it didn't work. It worked every single time. This one time, it just spun the wheels. and I can't replicate it. I can't make it do it again. But anyway, got hit from behind, came last. In the next race, I thought, you know what, I'll make up for it. I'll do the highest rated race of the week. I qualified. Sorry, Spanners. Someone is grinding the pavement outside my window all of a sudden.
That's good. It's ambiance. Carry on.
Okay. I decided to do a race afterwards just to make myself feel better. Got an amazing start. The guy that was in front of me lost control, spat his car across the track, fired me over the pit wall, and I was out of the race again. That time, definitely through no fault of my own. And I find myself now a couple of months away from 7K.
Okay, look, fair enough. But the I rating system, I'm starting to really, really like it and appreciate it. I think it generally puts you where you should be if you're concentrating on a series. So me being on the cusp of split one, split two, on the busiest sessions in F3, and if I jump in during the day, I seem to definitely get split one now. That feels about right for where I am, and, you know, I'm pottering around at the back trying to pick up attrition. Now, nobody is going to win every race because you're going to have bad luck, or like Brad, you're going to stuff up your start procedure every now and then. Doesn't your I rating just put you naturally where you are? Aren't you just a 6K kind of driver?
I do agree with that, to be honest. As far as Brad's unfortunate with his start, it's on his stream, and it's as he goes, Alex, look, this is how you do the start, and then proceeded to wheel spin. So you can go to @BradDude2K on YouTube and find that clip.
Ah.
But, you know, with regards to I do tend to agree with you. I'm in a much harder series now, and the F1 series last season was much harder, and my I rating dropped. I'd got that I rating up through Formula Renault 2.0 and Formula 3, which are easier series as far as the people you're racing with are concerned. Now that I'm in a harder series, I find myself dropped back a little bit, and I'm fighting for position sort of in the middle of the pack.
Hello to our live stream, by the way. We're streaming live on the Missed Apex Motorsport channel. That's where we stream all our Missed Apex rounds as well. Round 5 is July 9th, and it will be at... Oh, did I give it away? I didn't give it away. I didn't. Well done, me. I kept it secret. Hello, Mike Stoner in the chat. Hello, James Cottam in there as well. The reason we've kept it a secret is because if we just announce it a month out, like we have done in the past, people will practice literally every day until they get to the event. And some people were like, oh, that's not fair. I'm like a dad with 8 jobs. I can't practice every day. I can't compete against you freelance bums who are working from home.
By people, you mean Danny, right?
Yeah. Brad, what do you think? What would you do if it's your series? Would you like, I'd be tempted to only announce it like 2 days before.
Well, yeah, because then you know where it is and you can just do loads of practice that you don't want them to do.
You have to trust me. I'm not, how dare you? I'm a public figure.
Well, I mean, who decides where the track is? Is it literally random, or do you decide? Because if you don't know for sure where it is, you'll certainly have a list of options in your mind and you might have a hunch where you're going to decide.
I've never practiced ahead of time.
I just want to defend the whole I rating thing. Okay, sorry, I didn't get a chance to defend my position. I disagree, and because you say, oh, you're just a 6 point whatever K driver. It's a game. This is part of the game. No, I don't mean iRacing is a game.
Okay.
I mean the quest for iRating is a game, and part of that is putting yourself in a position where you work out how to get around the system. Part of the problem with the system is stuff goes wrong. You have equipment failures. I've had hundreds and hundreds of iRating lost through things just not working, like my computer just turning off or the VR headset resetting and all that kind of thing. That's nothing to do with driver skill. An I rating is supposed to be a measure of driver skill. So I'm determined to make sure I eradicate any potential mistakes, any equipment issues, all that kind of thing, and just nail the races until I get to the thing that I deserve and desire.
Okay, but isn't there a case that everyone is suffering those kind of issues? Everyone's had a headset dropout, so, you know.
Yeah, and people will suffer them more if they don't try to kind of get around them and make sure they don't happen. So that's part of the skill. In the same way that making sure, you know, silly little things, making sure your seatbelts are properly done up in your race car means that they won't ping open during a race. It's just one extra little thing you can cover off to make sure you have an advantage over other people.
And the equipment ladder that we've spoken about here is certainly part of that. You know, I have to keep reminding myself sometimes, you know, when you drop into like a Formula V race, You go, there's going to be people there with a desk clamp on a laptop, like I used to do. I used to have my laptop like fully open, you know, not at 90 degrees like a normal laptop, but like as open as I could to get it a little bit higher, and then propped up between a keyboard and like a box.
And let's speak about those Formula Vs. Now I have finally driven them.
Ah, you have.
What a hateful little car.
Oh, no.
What a horrible, horrible, hateful car that I never will drive again.
Oh, no. Hang on a minute. Okay, for you to drive, but what about as an entry series into open wheelers?
I mean, I guess, yeah, if you want people to have a horrible experience when they enter iRacing.
Alex, you've done... I'm really, really shocked. Alex, you've done the Formula Vs.
They're fine. They're no worse than... I mean, they are much better than the MX-5. I think the MX-5 is a hateful, horrible car that I never want to drive. But no, the Formula V is fine. You know, it's fun. You can sort of play around with it on the limit, and it's not as leery as the Skippy, which I don't like. And yeah, it gives you, you know, it gives you a chance to start with your open wheel skills.
I mean, I tried to play around on the limit. I probably practiced in the car for like 40 minutes, and all I found was that I just understeered off the track all the time. There was like, you couldn't dance on like a neutral balance limit. It was just understeer, no power, horrible experience.
Oh, wow. So I jumped in it, and the thing that struck me was that it taught you how to at least manage oversteer, understeer. So when I've put my lad in it, I've seen him have the same kind of experience that he has in a kart. And I just felt like, oh, if people are doing this before they jump into Formula Renaults and Formula 3s, they're at least going to kind of learn the basics of how to stop yourself understeering or losing the back end.
Yeah, I do agree. You'll find everything else easier once you've done it. It's like the absolute worst case scenario.
Okay. Well, I have started my lad on the Formula Vs. He's got his own account, and that is free content. We have an account that we already pay for the iRacing broadcasts, but it's never been raced. It's what our video director uses. So he's starting afresh on the Formula Vs. He is on the bottom of 13 splits, the first competitive race he did, and he finished third. He got a podium. And so he's got his first podium in iRacing, and I'm jealous because I don't think I've had a podium since maybe September last year.
Go on, tree face.
Yeah,
okay.
He's done it. He's done all right. He's really enjoyed it. So we're not going to let Brad ruin that. But also, this is where the iRating system kind of falls down a little bit. So you jumped into a new series, and everyone seems to take a penalty on iRating when they jump into a new series, and it stops you jumping in and out. So because Long Beach is a terrible idea, I decided not to do that on F3 because I'm going to get upset. Why am I paying $17 to get upset? So I've given that a miss, jumped on our normal swarm night, and a few of the guys were doing LMP2 at Red Bull Ring. So I thought, okay, I will jump in, I'll have a practice. And I kind of got to grips with it, so I wasn't crashing. 10 minutes practice. I went, do you know what? I'm going to go for it. Most of these races have a ton of attrition anyway, so I'm going to go for it. Not a single car in the split that I was in, which was like 2 out of 6, crashed. So I finished dead last. Lost 82 I rating, ended up getting like 12 incident points and accidentally punting the second place guy when I was being lapped because, you know, it takes 18 years to break.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, I'm really tempted to try like GT3s, but I'm not very good in them. So it will take me some time to get used to it. I jumped into a race at Sebring a while ago and I was last by miles because I just didn't know the car and I couldn't drive the thing properly. But also, so it does, it makes you go, do I really want to risk dropping everything down? And then when I go back to my series, not be in the splits I want to be because I've lost
absolutely
so much iRating. But also what I have found, you talk about no one crashing and no attrition. When you get into the higher class races, like the B class series that F3.5 is in and the A class series that IGP is in, is you're right. The drivers are better and they don't go off the circuit. So I was in a battle for sort of 9th and 10th last night. And I'm like, it's Road America. Someone's going to fall off the track. And the person that fell off the track was me.
Yeah.
But apart from that, everyone and the lap times are so close. And, you know, you're gaining 1 or 2 tenths or losing 1 or 2 tenths. When in F3, if you're slightly out of position, you can gain seconds rather easily. You're like, oh, I can catch this guy. And you're like, oh, actually, I'm only catching by 0.1 a second a lap. And I've only got 5 laps left.
Yeah, so doing that LMP2, I didn't do another race because it was going to stop me from being top splits in F3. And top splits in F3, you genuinely can have a pit lane start and finish 13th if you want. Like, if you just want to pick up 20 I rating at a time, you can absolutely do that. So I wonder if there's a case for a kind of series rating and doing the splits by a series rating. Brad, would that encourage you to do more different series?
That's an interesting point. I do the series I do because I enjoy driving the car. I don't do the Formula 3.5 because it is necessarily where I'll get most I rating. That is my aim, obviously, to progress with that. But if I didn't enjoy driving the car or enjoy the style of racing, I wouldn't do it. So the reason I generally stay away from the GTs, I know we did Le Mans a few weeks ago, is because I just don't find them as enjoyable on iRacing because you're missing G-force as a sensation, because that's like the one thing that isn't being replicated. I feel like when you're in a car that there's a lot of momentum, like a GT car, and the car is heavy and it's difficult to slow down, it's harder to drive it more naturally in a sim. Whereas when I jump in something that's got lots of grip, it's light and it turns quickly when I tell it to. It's very direct, like a single seater. It feels a bit more easy to drive without the G-force being told to you.
Yeah, fair enough. And you've probably, you know, you've become a kind of single seater specialist a little bit in sims, which is like opposite of what you are in real life.
Exactly. I was going to just bring up that point. If this was real life, I wouldn't be fit, although I'm pretty fit, I wouldn't be fit enough to jump in a Formula 3.5 or effectively a Formula 2 level car. No way, not even close. It wouldn't last a couple of laps. And a GT style car or a tin top in general would definitely be the thing I'm more suited to. Yet on iRacing, because I feel I can drive more naturally in a single seater, that's the thing I gravitate towards. So I think maybe a series rating thing might be a good idea. I'd need to hear more about it.
I mean, I think the point that Brad brings up there about momentum and about the way the cars move around, and I think what that does for me is it just makes the single seaters more fun to drive. You know, I feel like I have to have such a ridiculous level of concentration in the GTs to get it round a lap, let alone an entire race with other people around me. But in a single seater, you can kind of thrash it, drive it a little bit on autopilot, have the fun, and then push it beyond the limits.
Yeah, well, even with the LMP2, I thought that I had some kind of fault with my brake at first, because I'm desperately trying. And then the instincts, it takes a while for those instincts to change, and that's why I ended up hitting. I let both the leaders through. You know, I moved over, I let them through. Then I tucked in behind and I just didn't brake in time. Obviously, you can survive a little bit more in a LMP2. So it didn't ruin his race. He was not happy with me on the voice chat at all. Not very forgiving at all. But I shouldn't have been in that race. So, like, surely there's some system where I should have jumped in and been in a lower tier. Do you know what I mean? I should have been in a lower split. Or, like, if you have some kind of series specific rating, like, you need that to go in the top two splits. If you come in without that rating and you're 6,000, you're going to get put in split three and you've got to work your way up. I don't know. I'm just an ideas guy. I'm not a practical guy.
So they use a very similar system to this in real life racing at the Nordschleife. You could be Lewis Hamilton, but you couldn't enter a VLN race without a specific Nordschleife license. And even then, you couldn't enter in a fast or a high powered car. Even as a Formula One driver, there's no way around the system, because I've seen it happen. Andre Lotterer, who raced for, was it Caterham in Formula One a few years ago? He came in, he wasn't allowed in a GT3 car because he hadn't done enough races in the kind of slower power cars to get his A permit. So maybe that would work in sim racing too.
Yeah, I think something like that. So if my aim now, I've put my aim to get into like mid to high 2000s I rating. So I'm risk-free when I do F3. I'm risk-free. I'm always going to be in the top split. That's my aim. That limits me from doing anything else. So I can't jump in Formula V to, you know, to have a race, because, you know, I'm risking my I rating for something that I don't know how to drive and I'm not competitive in. And that's just kind of restricting the fun. Thomas in the live chat said that's what week 13's for. That's what he said. Don't even start me on week 13. Week 13, where the things I've spent hundreds of pounds on, all that content that I have paid for, if I happen to have a free week in week 13, I can't do that. I've got to go and race Little Wings around the centrifugal circuit.
Yeah, unfortunately, Thomas has picked the worst three people to bring up a question about week 13 with, because I think we all really, really dislike week 13. And the thing is, it's not what week 13 is for, because you only get one day to practice a track. So, you know, if let's say the GT3 was at Red Bull Ring, I'd want a good few days to practice that car on that circuit to get up to speed, because there are guys miles and miles up the road as far as lap time. I'm talking 2-3 seconds up the road, that it's time you have to find just by understanding the car. And some people are more adaptive, you know, Brad will be much more adapted to that kind of thing than I am. But for me, I really have to get sort of really embedded in a car and a circuit to learn how it works, and to jump from car to car to car to car, from track to track to track over the course of 1 week is not enough to prepare yourself for a series.
A lot of the chat room here, Maverick. Oh, that's Danny, isn't it? Maverick Sim Racing and Kirk. I was nearly called Kirk, by the way. Kirk, say, they're talking about separating open wheel and tin tops, basically. And that feels like it would make sense, because there's definitely a single seater progression. But then that automatically gives you an A license. So I've got the A license to go and do all the tin top stuff. And I'm absolutely rubbish at all of that. So yeah, maybe there's a case for those two to be separated out a little bit more. Force feedback was the main thing I wanted to talk about today. We got a really good question about it, but I've completely forgotten who sent us the question. In fact, no, Brad, you got the question. It was an email to you, I think.
Yes. I don't remember who it was either, though, because I wasn't prepared. But I was nodding in excitement because this is something that's a really interesting topic to talk about.
Okay, so let's start with how close is the general steering experience in a... Well, let's split it up between the off-the-shelf, let's say the bottom-end commercial wheels like the G29, G27, those kind of wheels. And then we've got the belt-driven ones of the T300 and the Thrustmaster TSPC that I've got here, all the way up to then these direct drive wheels that you're rocking, Brad. Do any of them come close to the feel you get when you are driving? And you've driven all range of cars as a instructor. You've driven competitively in a bunch of GT and road cars, and you've also tested single-seater cars as well. Am I getting anything close to the steering feel of any race car?
Yeah, so the first thing to point out is that in real life, you're not just getting your steering information through the weight of the steering wheel. You're also getting it through the G-force your body is experiencing, your inner ear, and, you know, other sensations outside of just this what you're feeling through the steering wheel. And in fact, if you were to ask most professional race drivers, what does the steering wheel do in your hands when you experience understeer or oversteer or you know, all that kind of thing, or you hit a curb, which direction does the wheel go? The vast majority of them won't be able to tell you because they're not thinking about it. It's a thing that happens and they do respond to it correctly because they've learned, but they've never had to consciously think about what the information is that's coming through the steering wheel. Which is why this is a bit of a kind of interesting topic, because we're in a hobby here where the feel through the steering wheel is all of the steering information we're getting. That's where we need to interpret that correctly, and it needs to be accurate in order for us to be fast. If you've ever had a steering failure in iRacing where the force feedback's just stopped, unless you're someone who's just always used no force feedback, it's almost impossible to drive. I certainly couldn't get round a lap without any force feedback. So in terms of the weight and the information that's coming through a modern direct drive steering wheel, I think it's almost indistinguishable from what you would have in a real car, provided the settings are correct.
Yeah.
And you've got something that's got enough potential to provide enough torque. I think if you closed your eyes and you removed G-force from the equation, it was purely the sensation coming through the steering wheel, I think a modern direct drive force feedback wheel is giving you basically exactly what you get in real life, even to the point where the weight is the same. So the reason someone asked me a question in an email was actually talking about how many Newton meters of torque I thought a GT3 car produced in real life, because they wanted to get their wheel similar.
Well, I think this is because as well, with this baby Fanatec direct drive wheel, there's two power options. There was the 5 Newton meter option and the 8 Newton meter option as well. So there's a lot of people thinking, well, which option should I go for? If, and are we leaving some of the racing experience off when you talk about the 5 Newton meter option? For example, have you got a podium direct drive wheel? Is that what you've got?
I've got a Simya Cube 2 Pro.
Oh,
so
okay.
Almost the top. So there's one that's an Ultimate, which goes up to, I think, 30 Newton meters, which is just excessive.
Okay, what's yours? What's yours at?
Mine's like 21, I think.
Oh, okay. So
as a maximum.
Do you ever get anywhere near to 21 Newton meters when you're setting yours?
No, I think I have mine set to 15 as a maximum, something like that. But in reality, unless you're driving a very high-end single-seater, you will never experience that kind of feedback through a real-life steering wheel, because most race cars have power steering. Even a Formula One car has power steering, although they will tune that to still allow a pretty heavy steering sensation. I'll try and go into the reasons why that's a good thing.
Yeah, no, do that now. I mean, that was going to be my next question was, do we want to have the same sensation? Do we want to have the same information? And do we want to have the same weight?
Yeah, so in the same way that you want to have a brake pedal which allows you to press it very firmly, because that expands the resolution at which you can brake. It basically gives you a bigger range of brake application if your brakes can take, say, I'm just pulling this out of thin air, but say your brakes can take 20 kilograms of force as opposed to another brake which only accepts 1 kilogram of force maximum. You've just got a much higher resolution of how much brake you can apply. For the same reason, the force feedback or the weight of the steering being heavier allows the sim to give you a greater depth of information of how much grip you've currently got and when that grip starts to bleed away. If you kind of took that to an extreme and you had a wheel where there wasn't so much weight, it would be a lot more binary. It would kind of be there's some grip or there's no grip. Whereas when you expand this range, you make it heavier up to, say, with my wheel, say, around 20 Newton meters, the sim can just tell you more. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to make you quicker, because sometimes having to hang on to a bucking Bronco of a heavy steering wheel like that will cause you to be slower.
Oh, I'm loving the construction sounds in the background there.
I'm so sorry. My neighbours have decided to have their driveway dug up literally as we started this podcast.
Curse them. No, it's absolutely fine, people. I can probably edit it out and people understand that we are not in studios. I just want to add to that, you know, the resolution and the knowing whether you have grip or not. When I went from the 300 to the TSPC, that is the biggest single step I've taken. And it was unbelievable. And I didn't have to think about it. I just instinctively knew how much grip I had on corner exits, and I could push way more. And we're talking over a second a lap, just like that, without thinking about it.
And that's because with your previous wheel, the difference in feel between a little bit of understeer, for example, and a lot of understeer is not very much. Mm-hmm. Whereas the greater number of Newton meters your wheel can provide you with, the more you can tell that difference, and you can just tell a bit more about exactly what's really happening to those tyres.
Yep. We've got in the chat, we've got Danny asking Alex to tell the story of when they turned up his force feedback for you.
So I went to Danny's to go try out his sim rig, and he's got a Podium DD1 with a Fanatec Podium DD1, which is also 21 Newton meters of torque. And he runs his at about 30%, which actually is about, which works out at about 6-7%.
Alex does maths. Yep.
definitely haven't done that on a calculator before. And he's right. It gives you more resolution. And as I said before on a previous show, the beauty of a direct drive wheel over a belt driven wheel like my TSPC, which is the same as your spanners, is the smoothness. But what we did was he'd been, you see lots of things in forums, people saying they put their wheels up really, really high. And he put me in an Indy car and turned the wheel up to 70%.
Yep.
And I could not hold the wheel straight. He should have videoed it because it was hilarious, because I'm just like this going down the straight. So you just can't hold it. And it is, the extra power is there for the resolution and the detail.
Okay, so that wobbling down the straight is at least one thing that these wheels don't tend to very accurately represent. That doesn't happen in a real car. That's a kind of force feedback issue with the damping, where kind of around the center it tries to recenter itself and it bounces either direction. So that isn't a thing you'd have
in a real car. It's an overcorrection. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, if you got a real Indy car with very, very heavy steering, that wouldn't be such a problem. But yeah, you're right. Most of the time, if you were to whack these force feedback, these direct drive wheels up to their maximum, then it's going to be way higher than actually the real car would be.
Those Indy car wheels settings seem to be automatically heavier. They make, you jump in an IndyCar, say, from an F3, and it makes your wheel feel very, very heavy. And I put my lad in the IndyCar, and, like, bless him, he doesn't complain ever. And he's sitting there, and he's, like, starting to sweat as he's going around the track. And I'm like, is that wheel heavy? He's like, yeah, it's really heavy. So I had to, like, really crank it down. I'm interested in you saying that F1 drivers are basically picking the weight of their wheel because they could just have it so that it was fingertip driving. So they're in the same situation as us because we don't have to have any feedback. So how do they pick the weight that they want, and how should we pick the weight that they want? I will just say, like, I've been going in between really heavy because it feels amazing and it's a great pump and I feel like I'm getting, like, the full racing experience. But I have found that when I crank it down to, like, 10, I don't know what the thing is, 10 in the settings. So 16 feels really great, but it's way too hard. I go down to 10. It feels quite light, but I seem to get faster lap times. So how do we pick?
It's going to be a little bit down to what works best for you. You asked about how a Formula One driver would pick. Yeah. And obviously I've got no experience of being a Formula One driver, picking a certain amount of power steering level, but it would just be the amount that gives them the enough information, like the amount of required information through the steering without being so heavy that you can't quickly apply corrections. One of the reasons I don't turn mine up any higher than I currently have in iRacing is that when I need to quickly apply opposite lock, make micro corrections or a big correction to stop the car getting too sideways in a particular moment, if it's too heavy, I can't do that accurately enough or quickly enough. So I find the balance where I have enough information when I'm loaded up in a corner, but it's not so heavy that I can't deal with things that are happening when the car gets out of shape.
And it's hard to actually have that direct comparison unless I put it in the setting that, in fact, hey, Brad, do you want to come over for a cuppa, right? I will set it to the settings I like, and then you might sit in it and just go, this is ridiculous. Like, it's way too light. What are you doing, you idiot? Which is what you did on my G29. I brought it round your house one time, and you giggled and laughed and called my setup a toy setup and mocked me.
Yeah, because how I was thinking, how can you feel anything through this? Although I had the same thing.
It was G27.
I've experienced in real race cars where the steering has been too heavy that I couldn't push hard enough because I wouldn't be able to correct when the car got sideways. I wouldn't be, because it's not just about applying opposite lock. When you apply opposite lock, normally the wheel wants to go in that direction. So the thing that you're feeling when the car gets sideways is actually the wheel is being pulled out of your hands in the direction you should be turning to correct it. So the initial correction actually is easy. But the bit that's difficult is then immediately straightening the wheel afterwards. That's the bit where you have to push through the force feedback. You're having to effectively scrub the tires straight again, even though the car itself, from your viewpoint, the wheel wants to keep turning into the slide because the car is at an angle. So I've felt that in real race cars, testing F3 cars, and actually racing in Formula Palmer Audi, which was kind of a slightly lower than a Formula 3 equivalent in the mid-2000s. The steering, there was definitely no power steering, massive, big, fat, slick tires, and a geometry in the steering which made it unbelievably difficult to turn the wheel. And I was held back because I couldn't confidently correct those slides. So that would be an example where if I was in Formula One and I could tune the steering, or if I was in iRacing, I would tune it down so I was quicker.
There are a few things in iRacing to help you get the settings right. So first of all, there's the initial settings page where you set where it says force and it's set there in Newton meters, and you set that to the maximum Newton meters of your wheelbase. People have messed about with it and put it high and put it low. But that is, you're telling the sim what your peripheral, your wheel, is putting out to them.
Is that the top bar? Is that the top bar?
That's the top one, yeah.
Oh, and then I was adjusting that to taste. That's the one I've been adjusting to taste.
No, so that should be at about 5.6, I think, which is what our wheel gives out. You then got dampening, which you don't want any of. I don't really understand it, but having no dampening seems to work. And then you have minimum force. Now, minimum force is the amount of force that the system puts through your wheel before your wheel detects it. So if you put that at zero, it's trying to detect absolutely everything and your wheel can't pick it up because it's not, you know, our wheel, for example, I've got mine set to, I think, 2.7. And the reason I found 2.7 is there is a an application which detects the minimum force.
Yeah.
But that's quite a long process. We'll have to do that another time. But the other one is one you can do in the car. When you go onto the setup page, there's where you can adjust your wheel mirrors and your height of your seat. At the bottom, there is one that says force feedback. And after a few laps, a little button turns up next to it that says auto. And if you just press on that, it sets your steering to the resolution limit of the sim. So it's what the sim thinks is the heaviest you can have your wheel at without losing any resolution.
I will just add a note to that, is that don't do it. Stay off the curbs if you're going to do that, because that affects what it thinks the settings will be. Brad?
Also, don't do that with a direct drive wheel, because it'll just rip your arms off, because it'll go, you can cope with 20 Newton meters. That's what I will let you have.
Fair enough. I think, that's good. All right, good. And so a lot of it will be down to preference, but I was just wondering if there's I'm in F3 and someone is going to say to me, no, you definitely want it super heavy in F3. What are you doing, you idiot?
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Set it to whatever you are quickest at. It's just, it might not be immediately obvious why you're quicker with a certain setting. One of the other reasons why having a bit more weight tends to be good is it stops you, or at least tries to prevent you from applying too much lock too soon. You know, a lot of people induce understeer because they turn in with more steering than is actually required.
Yeah, yeah.
And having a heavier wheel kind of prompts you that it helps you feel where the heaviest point is, so you can keep it at the point where it you know, you're on the point where you're nearly understeering, but not quite. So anyway, do you.
Alex. No, you were done. Okay, good. That was a really good segment, actually. Thank you very much for that detail, Brad. You're always very patient with us idiots and our stupid questions. That brings us near to the end of this recording, and someone stupidly has scheduled this over FP2 of the Styrian Grand Prix. But two quick ones, a little bit of GT3 and, F3. We've not really talked about this. F3 Open League versus Fixed. So what they're running now is you'll have an open race, and then in the next hour you'll have a fixed race with the iRacing settings. So I have decreed, and I've decided, and I assume I'm in charge, that the fixed league is the real F3 league, and the open league is now the hacker league. Because I've definitely noticed I've just noticed a bit of a difference where I'm not surprised. In the fixed league, I feel like I'm racing someone and we're all racing the same thing. And then I'll jump into the open league, and then someone's got a ridiculous advantage on the straights because they've got some weird negative rake madness going on. And you're not seeing that in the fixed. So that's what I think. I'm settled, Alex. I don't care about the hacker league anymore. I'll do it for fun, but I'm not invested in it.
You know me, Spanners. I love to disagree with you, but I'm not going to disagree with you on this one. I even went ahead and go at last week's one, which was
Watkins Glen,
and the setup was actually really nice.
Yep.
Even on cold tyres, straight out of the pits was really nice, and I felt that you could push easily, which just for when you want to jump from series to series and you want to do more than one series a week, having a decent fixed setup is really good. It's like, but not all the fixed setup leagues are good. So there's the Ferrari 3458, whatever it's called these days, challenge, which is a fixed league. And that setup is horrible. I've tried it so many different tracks and it's horrid to drive. So not all fixed leagues are born equal, but this one is very good.
Brad?
So I think, and I've said this loads of times, you're much better served having just your own driving to work on as a thing to take up your time when you've got some practice time, rather than having to improve your driving, but always questioning whether, yeah, should I just be changing the setup? Could I find more time by changing something in the setup, and then having to try that and then adapt your driving to that new setup? And it's just way more efficient and way more beneficial as a driving sim for you to be being the driver and not the engineer.
Yeah, we can have a separate game, can't we, that is like I engineer, and that's it, and people can just be engineers. So between those two setups, what people have been saying is, well, okay, it worked quite well at Watkins Glen. What if you get an iRacing setup that's a stinker? It might ruin the series. Well, we'll see if that happens. But generally, the iRacing setups, they were a bit wobbly at first. And then we started noticing more and more like, oh, actually, they're kind of getting it right. They're on the safe end of things. They're on the, what's that, the balance, Alex?
Yeah, they're a lot more balanced. They're not the fastest, but they make sure you don't understeer or oversteer at every single corner.
So I had a direct comparison here because Dory Tabachnik, go and search out his YouTube channel, Dory_N. He distributes a setup, and it was marginally nicer to drive. So between the two, I would probably have Dory's setup. But once we got into the, you know, in the swarm, we're doing an open and a fixed, it wasn't worth switching between the two. I just stuck with the iRacing setup, and I didn't, you know, it didn't stifle my enjoyment. It was slightly less pointy. So I think that's a win to start with. But when I jumped into the LMP2, I think I definitely wouldn't have done it if it was an open setup. I know it was a disaster and I shouldn't have done it, but the fact that it was fixed meant, oh, I can jump in. I don't know. I think some setups, I think, yeah, I don't know. If we took it away forever, the open setups, would it really detract from the game?
I think it'd make it more of a meritocracy, really, because, you know, at least if you jump into a new series and you know the setup is fixed, that you could still be at a disadvantage in terms of your own equipment. But if we set that aside, it's really just your driving. You know, you just need to improve the driving. And if you drive as well as someone else, then you will be as fast as them. So it's just one less variable that you have to worry about.
I have to admit, when we came up from the MX-5s to the Formula Renault 2.0 and setup suddenly became an issue, I did have a bit of a long sigh, you know, just like a, oh, really? We've got to do what? And I didn't know really about the setups. I jumped straight into the Skip Barber at one point, and this is before we all had the organized stuff. And so I'm happily just driving along in baseline, wondering why I couldn't do anything and couldn't go. I was like, this is rubbish. This is absolutely terrible. I didn't know about what baseline was or that people had fancy setups. I bet if I went back to that now, I'd find it very, very drivable. So yeah, I'm not a massive fan of the setups. Glad to see the F3 fixed setup and looking forward to that this season. Very last thing, Spa 24. Mist Apex Inc. is throwing our weight behind an entry into the Spa 24 GT3s. That's all I know about it. I'm not an expert on tin tops at all, but we have some very good tin top specialists in our team. So if you are listening to this and you're one of our swarm and you normally do the F3s, come and join us for this one event. We'll put you in a team. If you're an elite guy, we'll put you with like elite people trying to win. So if Brad and Alex want to do it and they want to win, we'll mush you into a mega team. No, you don't want to be in Alex's team, Brad?
I'm definitely not elite. I would definitely not put myself anywhere near elite. I've said enough about my poor performance in GTs to definitely not put myself anywhere near elite. I think I will dodge the 24 at this particular moment in time.
Well, the other thing we're doing for just participation is everybody else that doesn't mind about winning, we're going to try and equalize all the teams' I ratings to increase the chances of us getting into, you know, having multiple teams in one race. So I think that will be really good fun. We've got an international swarm. What do you call it? International swarm population. So we can have like the Australians doing the night races. We'll have the Brits starting it off because they'll have finished work. And as the Yanks finish work, they can jump in. And then we chuck the Aussies in afterwards. So we're going to try and like really, we'll put you into teams of four or six, split you up so that it's all nice and manageable. But I'm completely just firing blind. I've got no idea what it is, how it will work out, whether it will be fun. But you guys seem to have enjoyed your 24-hour experiences.
Well, Van Gene didn't. He didn't get one. But, I did.
To be fair, I enjoyed the experience of it because obviously, yes, okay, I didn't get to race before we got wrecked and got over about an hour's worth of damage. And by that point, everyone in the team had gone, can't bother anymore. I actually went out and did do a stint and did a really good stint. And then when I went to do my second stint, I just threw all caution to the wind and ended up doing it. But I wouldn't have done that having not been already well out of the race. But I love 24-hour events. I've done numerous 24-hour karting events, and I love being part of a team. And there is something really cool about watching your driver drive around the circuit while there's three of you in a chat, talking them around the race, talking about other cars that are coming past, to giving them different updates on things around the track, and feeling like a real race team. And that's the feel that you kind of get from doing these events, especially with things like Discord. You can hear each other really, really well. And you're at home, so you're not cold or wet, and you can sleep in a bed, and you've got all your creature comforts. So in a way, it's better than a real world 24-hour.
It certainly, there's a lot of things there that you don't get to do in a real 24-hour race. Like, your teammates aren't generally riding on board with you all the way around, seeing everything that's happening, seeing every one of your mistakes, and able to go, when you say, oh, I think I touched someone, is there any damage? In real life, your team can't just go on a camera angle outside and zoom in and go, no, it looks absolutely fine. So you actually get even more detail. You get to actually be this real, work as a real team unit in a way that's actually enhanced over a real life 24-hour race.
And like, I've got to take my lad to cricket practice Saturday morning. I wouldn't be able to do that in a real 24-hour, but we're going to try and work around everyone's schedules and try not to get anyone in trouble with their spouses or partners. And when I said to my wife, no, it's a 24-hour race, her face, she, and I'm like, no, I'm not racing for 24 hours. I only have to do like 4 hours or something in that time. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I don't know what to expect. I think we're going to go for a Friday start time. So Friday evening through to a Saturday evening. Please come and get involved. In the first instance, just email us at racecontrol@mistapex.net. racecontrol@mistapex.net. Come get involved. We'll have practice sessions. There's experts there. Do you think this is a good choice, Brad? Spa 24 GT3s?
Yeah, I think it's good because it's an iconic track. It's a good set of cars. I know you wanted to talk about the differences of each of the cars, but I don't know whether you've got time for that now. But it's just a good event. It's a proper 24-hour race. You don't have loads of different classes, but you do have different types of car, and the track's fun. And I think it'll be really good.
Okay, I'm really looking forward to it. And Alex, despite having less I rating than even a Spanners, you have been doing some racing masterclasses. A bit pretentious, if you ask me.
By the way, yours is 2243, which is about 40 less than me.
I forgot.
You did do that earlier, and I was just like, that's not right, because I checked it.
You know what? what I forgot about was the LMP2 race where I lost 80 I rating. Curses. But before that, I was temporarily higher than you.
You were. So yeah, no, I you guys talked about it on last week's show. I had a really good race at Hockenheim in the F3.5, and I had some amazing racing with some people I've never raced with before. And I was watching through the video, and I just thought, the racecraft here between people was great. So I thought, you know, I'm not the fastest guy on the planet in anything. I never have been, but I've always been very, very good in racing situations. And it's something that I've always been good at judging where to be. It took me a little while to get on board with it in the virtual world. I was struggling at the start, but I'm much, much more on top of it now. And I don't get in many crashes in racing incidents anymore. And I thought I'd put together a whole bunch of videos of how to behave in certain racing situations. There's so many videos out there where people moan about, this person crashed into me, whose fault is it, blah, blah, blah. And I didn't want that. I wanted a bit more of a positive video. It's a case of, these are the kind of things that you should do. And I've done two videos so far. They're on my YouTube. Just look for my name, Alex Van Geen, V-A-N-G-E-E-N. And you can have a look at them and tell me what you think. I'm going to do a few more. I think the next one I want to do will be based on how to survive a start. I've found enough videos now that I've got some good starts to take from. And if you want to, send me your own videos of decent racecraft and I'll make something on that.
All right. Through all of that, all I'm thinking of is like images burned into my head of you on a go-kart track and just the utter filth that I've seen from you at Mist Apex events. But yeah, by all means, make videos about clean racing.
Karting's a little bit different. You don't get damage or eye rating losses.
Poor David Hatton. I still remember you. Turn one at Rye House. You couldn't get past him. So eventually you just give him a little nudge. sent him out wide and went, oh, look, a lovely gap
for
me
to go
into.
That's not actually what happened.
That's exactly what
happened. I literally pushed him round the circuit until he ran out of talent, which took a while. He did very well that day.
Brad Philpott, Brad, search Brad Philpott on YouTube.
Yep, that's it. The followers are going up. It's good. People are obviously enjoying the streams. Yeah, I'm getting roughly 100 followers a month. The kind of predictor app that I use reckons that I'll be at 5,000 by the end of the year. So we'll keep pushing on. I'll keep making streams.
Brilliant. And search for at Bradley Philpott on Twitter and at Alex Van Gene on Twitter as well. Last question from the chat there. Kirk just says, do you all race GT3s at all? Are you experienced or beginners? Never. I've never raced a GT3, I don't think. So yeah, there'll be a lot of beginners. It doesn't matter. It's not going to be that kind of competitive atmosphere among my kind of group. I think we're going to try and get in there, and completing the 24 hours will be an achievement in itself. racecontrol@missedapex.net. Get in touch. Until we see you next. We'll see you next week. We'll do another one next week. Until then, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex iRacing Podcast. What tickled you, Mr. Van Gene?
David Hatton's in the chat.
Oh, is he?
He goes, yeah, I remember that too. I also remember him throwing a middle finger up at me while I'm driving behind him, which was quite funny. I think that's on the video. But there is a cracking video of me, David Hatton, and Kyle.
Oh, hang on. I forgot there was video evidence.
There is video evidence of it.
There's you denying you punted him. It's literally on camera.
Well, no, I was definitely giving him love taps. But the whole thing was, the problem was, David wasn't the problem. Kyle was the problem, because I didn't want Kyle to come past me. And he'd caught us up so much because David was defending so brilliantly that I just needed to get past him to stop Kyle coming past me, because with all due respect to David, I cared about beating Kyle, not about beating David.
There you go, Brad. It's okay to pump people as long as you've got, you know, as long as you really want to.
Or speed on the yellows.
Yeah.
Definitely forgot about that.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.